Hello, I'm Ray Dingeldine. I'm professor and chair of the Department of Pharmacology at Emory University School of Medicine, a job I've held since 1992. In the last couple of years, I'm also the executive associate dean for research in the School of Medicine. And I've been asked to talk about my work and particularly the paper that was selected by Thomson Reuters. My research has been in the field of epilepsy for 30 years now, although for most of that time, I've also been keenly interested in the functions of glutamate and its receptors in the brain. Epilepsy provides a fascinating window into brain functions, as I learned doing a postdoc with Per Andersen in Oslo, Norway in the late 1970s, where I worked with two medical students who were to become lifelong friends, Leif Gjerstad and Iver Langmoen. Later, I became more familiar with the medical and human side of epilepsy, which just cemented and increased my interest in this disorder and helping to improve the disorder. My work on epilepsy and that of the others in the 1980s pointed to a need to understand the process of excitatory synaptic transmission better, but at that time, we had very little knowledge about the synaptic glutamate receptors themselves that mediated transmission. And that realization led me to begin study of the molecular properties and pharmacologic properties of glutamate receptors. So back to these receptors. The paper that we published in 1999 was a review titled The Glutamate Receptor Ion Channels by Raymond Dingeldine, that's me, Karen Borges, Derek Bowie, and Stephen Trainellis. Karen and Derek were postdocs in the department at that time, and Steve and I had a long collaborative friendship beginning when he was doing his PhD thesis in my lab at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and continuing after he joined our department at Emory. He's a wonderful colleague with an independent mind and a rigorous yet practical approach to science, and altogether a joy to work with. So why did we write this review? Well, a number of amazing discoveries in the 1980s and 90s led to the gradual emergence of glutamate receptors in the brain as a major focus of neuroscience. Before the early 1980s, it was unclear even whether there was more than one type of glutamate receptor, but a fellow named Jeff Watkins from Bristol, England, invented selective antagonists that clearly showed there was more than one glutamate receptor. His NMDA receptor selective antagonists, for example, were quickly used in animal models to demonstrate a key role for NMDA receptor activation in the brain in a host of interesting subjects, including learning and memory, brain damage following experimental stroke, neuropathic pain, some forms of epilepsy, motor defects and Parkinson's disease, and in a more natural sense, the proper creation of hardwired sensory pathways in the brain during early development. The ability of NMDA receptors to flux calcium into the cells, into the neurons, appeared to be a critical feature of these functions. And I remember that publication of these findings triggered a flood of, almost giddy interest among neurologists, physiologists, and pharmacologists that actually continues today, all based on the expectation that eventually we'd be able to use knowledge gained to create new therapies for some of our most devastating brain disorders. The cloning of cDNAs encoding the glutamate receptors in the early 90s took the study of glutamate receptor pharmacology, physiology, and pathophysiology to the molecular level, and promised even more. 1998, the glutamate binding domain of a glutamate receptor subunit called GluR2 was crystallized by Eric Guo's group, and this began to reveal the structural basis for pharmacologic selectivity among the receptors. During all this time, both Steve Trainellis and I had independently contributed to a better understanding of glutamate receptor function. Steve had made the very interesting finding that local pH controlled NMDA receptor activation, and this finding later on provided for us an important clue that Steve and I parlayed into the formation of a biotech company, and I'll talk about a little bit about that later. Meanwhile, my lab had shown that NMDA receptors, alone among all neurotransmitter receptors, required the binding of a second amino acid, glycine, for activation, in addition to glutamate. So we coined the term coagonist to describe glycine's role. And NMDA receptors are still the only neurotransmitter receptor that's known to require binding of two separate agonists to be activated. We also found that a single amino acid residue controls calcium permeation in glutamate receptor channels, that the channel lining domain of glutamate receptor subunits is a reentrant loop rather than transmembrane as expected from previous ligand-gated ion channels, and that expression of a key subunit, GluR2, or now called GluA2, after seizures, the expression of GluA2 after seizures is controlled by a coordinate mechanism that involves transcriptional changes in chromatin structure and translational suppression mediated by a polymorphic sequence in the 5' UTR of the RNA. In any event, in the late 1990s, because of the rapid pace of discoveries in the previous decade, it became clear to Steve Trinellis and me that a comprehensive review of the glutamate receptor ion channels could be welcome. So we focused the review in published in pharmacological reviews. We focused it mostly on the properties of the receptors themselves rather than providing detailed information on their physiological roles or their regional distribution. So the so-called ionotropic glutamate receptors, they're ligand-gated ion channels, as compared with the metabotropic glutamate receptors that are coupled through G proteins to subcellular enzymes like adenylate cyclase. But the ionotropic glutamate receptors consist of three gene families that are pharmacologically and structurally distinct, but have as a common ground their ability to be activated by glutamate. So these are called the NMDA, AMPA, and kainate receptor families. Our review discussed the members of the three gene families, their subunit structure, mechanisms that give rise to receptor diversity, such as RNA splicing, editing, post-translational modifications. We also described molecular determinants of receptor activation and ion permeation that had extensively studied by site-directed mutagenesis. We included, of course, a hefty portion of molecular pharmacology and then ended with a rather brief discussion of therapeutic potential. In fact, just before the end, we ended the review with some thoughts about some of the major research issues in the field, and I can mention three of them here. One of them is whether glutamate receptor antagonists or allosteric potentiators will ever have practical therapeutic value. This has been the key question driving research in the glutamate receptor field. Secondly, what are the synaptic functions and therapeutic opportunities for kainate receptors? The kainate receptors were the last to be cloned, and there's the least known about them. And finally, how do neurons regulate the expression and function of glutamate receptors? So we ended that review with a guarded optimism that continued effort and collaboration among neurologists, physiologists, anatomists, and molecular biologists with injection of a good deal of capital might bring about a new generation of drugs targeted to some of our thorniest neurologic and neuropsychiatric problems. We're all expecting a return on the investment by the research community of time, careers, and money. So this 1999 review has now been cited by over 1,800 publications, and even though it's now 10 years old, I recently learned that it was the most highly cited paper in the field of pharmacology and toxicology, even in the first quarter of 2010. I think the high citation rate for this review is probably due to the timing of its publication coming just on the heels of a frenzy of work over a decade and a half, and the fact that it was quite comprehensive. Steve Trinellis and I have just submitted a sequel to that review about glutamate receptor ion channels that has brought us up to date on work from the last decade since the 99 review was published. This is also coming out in pharmacologic reviews, and our intent is to make it quite comprehensive, similar to the first review, has over 1,300 references, and we hope that this will carry on from the 99 review. It focuses again on the most recent data. Since the paper was published, we've continued work in the glutamate receptor field, spending most of our effort in two directions. We study the pharmacologic modulation of kainate receptors, trying to learn more about how the endogenous modulators of kainate receptors work and how we can regulate the properties of these receptors with drugs. And we study the transcriptional and translational mechanisms by which individual neurons regulate the expression of the various glutamate receptor subunits and thereby determine the properties of their own excitatory synapses. Now, I mentioned earlier that Steve Trinellis and I co-founded a small company to explore the clinical potential of a discovery that we made in our labs in the late 1990s. Jim McNamara from Duke is also a co-founder of our company called NeurOp. Just in brief, we're developing NMDA receptor antagonists that are more potent at acidic pH. Such compounds are designed, we reason, to be inactive at the ambient pH of the brain and thus have fewer on-target side effects. Yet, being effective neuroprotectants at the acidic pH that characterizes focal cerebral ischemia, such as occurs in stroke. Now, recently, NeurOp has secured a joint research deal with Bristol-Myers Squibb to develop drugs for CNS indications other than cerebral ischemia, and we'll continue to develop the ischemia arm ourselves. So I just have to say, nurturing this company through its early years has been it's been a really satisfying highlight of my professional career. And my work as a whole attempts to integrate information from a variety of experimental strategies to contribute to a better understanding of epilepsy. And I think my work has broad implications for other brain disorders, including stroke and major depression. So I just want to say thank you very much. I'm signing off from Atlanta with thanks to all my former and current colleagues for a terrific experience in my research career. Again, I'm Ray Dingledine.